Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Parker, medical whistleblower, coming to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. Today, we have a very important topic to talk about in regards to foster care and what might really be wrong with our system. Clearly, we have many problems in families that need, perhaps, to have an intervention by the state to protect children. It has been estimated, however, that 70% of the U.S. population in prisons was once in foster care. 3 in 10 of the nation's homeless adults report a foster care history. This points out a very obvious problem within our social service network. We must be failing these needy children. There are inadequacies in supervision of the placement of these children, clear indications of corruption within the system, as well as neglect of the children's needs. Let us today listen to the voices of those who know this system best. Former foster children themselves, from the Foster Care Alumni Association. This is video recorded by Psych Sleuth, Zoe Sophia, in 2007, and I think is a very, very important topic for us to hear today.
Doctor, I have a few questions, and then immediately after the session, pulls out a chart of medications and how to fix it.
Well, I was on a lot of medication.
So they started on me on a whole bunch of different depression medications.
As soon as I got there, they were telling me that I had to take medicine to be in that care or I couldn't stay at that RTC.
I go see a psychiatrist or a doctor, you know, he put me on 3 types of pills, you know. He says something to help my anger, something to help my depression, and something to help me relax.
I started at probably 11 or 12 with antidepressants, and I hadn't stopped till I was 18.
First of all, I was home. I started with 8 medications.
About 13 kids, really big family. Everybody was on medication.
It was another depression pill. They put me on, like, 4 different kinds of depression pills for I don't know why or whatever. I wasn't really depressed.
Switching from pills to pills, medication to medication, treatments to treatments.
I was on a couple of antidepressants that I do not even recall the names of.
I never knew that my medication was antipsychotic, and they told me it was to help me go to sleep.
And then it was this one big pill that looked like a horse. It's a horse pill or something. It was blue. It was that pill made me just crazy. That pill made me crazy.
It's up and down with my weight and with my mind, like, I don't know, you turn into a totally different person with these pills.
It just puts you on these 3s. I wasn't thinking about the outcome of those, and my outcome was bad. Well, I got a speech impediment now.
I became realized that I was a walking zombie.
Like, drugged up, I used to have a really high IQ, but then once I was on the medication, it dropped my IQ.
I was tired every day while I was in school. Because of the Seroquel I was taking every night.
You miss out on a lot because you're so zoned out with these pills or you're sleeping a lot.
And I couldn't focus at school. I'd be like dazing off or nodding away sometimes, and it was scary.
So I ended up sick, vomiting, faint spells, fainting in school, couldn't concentrate in school.
It is really different. Like, you really just space out. You don't know where you're at. Like, you just... You're there at the time, and then you end up somewhere else, and you're just like, man, I wasn't even there.
So all the medicine they were having me on, it was making me slow, like I was, like, crazy or something. And I guess that's what they want people to think, that we were crazy and we really wasn't. And they give you these meds that actually make you crazy.
I was so scared of them upping my dose all the time.
It makes you either retarded or unstable, or you can't do anything without it. It torments you.
And your property of the state or whatever, like they say, your state's property.
The foster families, the parents told us what to do and we were supposed to listen.
If I were to say no, I'd be scared that he'd say something like, well, should we up the dose?
And she signed this paper, and I was under, I guess, in an experimental kind of antidepressant that nobody had used before.
Medication screws up your life. It has long-term, short-term effects. It can kill you. And it, some people it does.
And they were talking about how, like, he got paid for every prescription he prescribed somebody. And so it made me think, and it stuck with me the whole time I was in foster care, that he got paid prescription that he prescribed.
Put that on medication to make you richer, to bring in your paycheck, to bring in your bills while destroying our lives.
And all I want to do is talk, and I guess they felt like they could talk to us by just giving us medicine.
We're trying to get these medications lower or even out of the system to help our kids actually have normal lives.
It's amazing. It's amazing for me to finally stand up for myself and say, I can't take these pills, I don't need them. And to have the desire to want more for people out there.
And I've been off of medication for a year, and I'm a whole lot better being off of it than I was on it. Like, I'm actually normal, I fit in.
I'm going to be changing the CPS rules. That's my goal in life, is to make sure that y'all niggas don't be doing that stuff to other people like me.
Basically, if you can help us where we have a little bit more voice out there, it's just a constant battle that we need more people to help us with. It's just a constant struggle, and we need more people's support and help.
You can hear them. These are the voices of our foster children, kept in foster care and medicated without their consent, forced druggings while they are in child protective custody. And as they very succinctly placed it before us, it is our job to make their voices be heard. This is Dr. Jeanette Parker. I'm medical whistleblower, and I represent a network of medical professionals and others in the medical community, bringing forward problems that they see within the medical community of medical fraud, abuse and neglect of patients, and human rights violations. In regards to the psychiatric drugging of foster children, we can have medical fraud because clearly forcing drugs on children without true medical need is a fraud, not only against the child, but also against the federal government who ends up picking up the tab for these drugs. It is also an abuse of the child who cannot escape what is happening to them. It is also a neglect of their real needs, which might be for counseling or more extensive investigation of why it is they're having their behavioral problems or why the situation in their family life is so severe that they cannot go home. And in truth, the use of psychotropic drugs to control behavior, to limit options for these children, to create situations which cause them to have amnesia over the abuse that they suffered. This is truly a human rights violation. Our children in foster care are very vulnerable, of course. Child placement agencies, foster parents, and residential treatment centers get paid a daily sum for the care of each child. These allocated amounts are based on the federal entitlement system of 4E and are based on the level of care the child needs. The more difficult the child is to care for, the higher the daily payment for care. Thus, it is in the interest of state agencies, social service workers, foster parents, and therapeutic clinicians to make the child appear on paper to need the highest level of care possible. Many foster children are labeled with more than one psychological diagnosis in order to upgrade their status to a higher level. Foster care daily rates run from $17 a day to $1,000 a day. So there is considerable financial incentive to upgrade the medical status of the child. A child in foster care diagnosed with a mental disorder and placed on psychiatric drugs is worth more than a child without those problems. Let us hear firsthand from individual foster children now who were interviewed at the foster care alumni meeting and were asked about their experiences in child protective services while they were still wards of the court system.
I went to foster care and I was
This is Anita.
And when I went in, I was like a shy person. I wasn't really new to the stuff that was going on around me. I was new to girls and I was new to having other people take care of me. So I was a shy person at first, and I wasn't ready for that. And then as soon as I got there, they were telling me that I had to take medicine to be in that care, or I couldn't stay at that RTC. And I didn't know why I had to, but they said, well, you have to be able to take this medicine. If you don't take it, then we cannot keep you. The medicine they prescribed for me, they did not give you a little amount of doses to tell you how. They didn't give you a little bit to see how you go it. They automatically dose you to like 500 milligrams. I think they should know a kid before they just stick you on medication. And they didn't really know us. They automatically thought I was depressed because I was like a shy person. And I wasn't really depressed. I was just trying to get new of the environment I was in because I was in Austin, and then they shipped me to another city, to another one, to another one. So I was basically trying to get used to the environment, and I was kind of, it was the first time me ever being in care and losing my mom while I was in care and my sister and all that. And every time that you cry when somebody, like, die in your family or scream out of frustration, they automatically want to restrain you. The people that would come in there, they'll hear me yelling, well, you need to calm down. We got to protect you and all that, and I wasn't really doing nothing. I was just yelling out of frustration and crying because that's the only way I could deal with my emotions at the time. And they just came, like, three big guys just came in there and then slammed me on the floor and then put me in the isolation room. And I was just crying, like, you gotta be quiet and stuff. And they knocked my head on the floor of the rug, and I had a carpet burn right on my forehead and on my arm. I have a lot of carpet burns. And they dosed me all these medicine to calm me down. And sometimes when I get visitors, I be looking out of space, like I wasn't acting myself. And it made my attorney and Casa a little concerned about it because all the medicine they were having me on, it was making me slow, like I was like crazy or something. And I guess that's what they want people to think, that we were crazy and we really wasn't. And they give you these meds that actually make you crazy. I used to have these terrible nightmares that I scream and holler when I wake up. I have bruises on my body and stuff. And it started when I started taking pills. And I didn't know why it started. And then I was like, tell them, can they please give me off or lower my dosage? And I couldn't focus at school. I'd be like dazing off or nodding away sometimes. And it was scary. I just think that they really should control their restraints because sometimes they don't know how to restrain or they go too far. I didn't know how to act on that, just seeing girls going after each other, hitting staff and all this, and then staff actually knocking them out and then calling back up. And then I see all these girls getting thrown in the wall and on the floor. I'm looking like, are they supposed to treat us like that? I mean, we the one with problems. We go to our family. We in our family house. And the reason why we in care because of our own environment. That's the reason why I was in care, because of what happened to me with my dad and my mommy and losing my sister and all that, and what happened to how she died and what happened to me. That's why I was in care, to get taken better care of. And when I get in care with total strangers that really don't know me and I don't know them, and they're nowhere near my parents. So, of course, we're going to have attitudes like, you're not my mom, you're not my dad, because we don't know these people, and then they automatically take it offensive. Just because they got kids, they treat us like they're kids, but they do it wrong. Yeah, I don't think they'll treat their kids the way they treat us, and if they do, that's just a shame. The worst restraint I ever saw was the one where they put your hand, put your hands in the back and kind of make you, like, pull it, and they put their knee in, their, in your back and kind of make push it and pull your hands at the same time. And that's the worst restraint. And then there's kind of second worst restraint that I ever saw was on the wall, when they knee you in the wall and you're, like 2 inches off the ground and they're holding you up and, like, telling you to be quiet and shoving your head in the wall. That's another worst one I ever saw, and that's the isolation room. They shouldn't really have to restrain you in isolation room. Like, they did it because a girl was screaming. And she was just screaming out of pain because she got restrained, had a carpet burn right here. And they ran in there and just grabbed her and pushed her against the wall just because she was screaming. And I could understand she was sitting there carving on herself, or she was sitting there actually hurting or harming herself. I could understand them trying to restrain, but I don't think it should have been a restraint that bad just because she was screaming. I think maybe they should did a little tea restraint, or kind of went there and kind of talked to her. I mean, I know I've seen some of the girls that I had been living with, they got raped by their foster daddies and stuff, and that hurt me so bad. I had really never went through that, but I had went through it by watching it, and I don't like watching it. And I don't know, a lot of us girls and guys, we get raped in our own environment. Then when we come to these people for help, the first thing they do is harm us as if, like, we are bad or something. Yeah, we have problems. We have little behaviors that are not normal because of what we've been through and what we have seen. And I feel like maybe they should be a little sensitive to us, and they act like they don't care. You know, they'll treat us like normal kids. We are normal. Don't get me wrong. We're normal. We're just normal with a little bit extra problems than a normal kid that ever been with, like, a nice family and a family that actually care about them and a family that actually raised them. We have not been through that, and we try to get love from these people, and they treat us like if they don't care about it, they're just there for the money. It was a depression pill. But for some reason, it made me more depressed. And then it was this other pill when you get all mad and angry. Well, they give you one of those to calm down. And those things don't work. They're like sugar pills. And it felt like it didn't really work. And it calmed me down. And then they got me another pill that was called, it was another depression pill. They put me on, like, 4 different kinds of depression pills for I don't know why or whatever. I wasn't really depressed, but I don't know why. And it just made me more depressed. It made me feel like a lonely person. I didn't really want to conversate with anybody. I wanted to be by myself. And there was this other pill that made me feel moody and kind of grouchy and stuff. And I forgot what it was, but it was really little and white. And then it was this one big pill that looked like a horse. It's a horse pill or something. It was blue. That pill made me just crazy. That pill made me crazy. Medicine can't cure everything. Maybe a little of this, maybe Tylenol can cure a little headache. But when it's something emotionally, it can't really cure that. It's something that has to be done by a therapist or something. Well, I'm 20 years old. And I've been off of medication for a year, and I'm a whole lot better being off of it than I was on it. Like, I'm actually normal. I fit in. I wasn't this outsider. I actually fit in without this medication. I knew I could do it without it. I would just have to get used to the environment first and express my feelings to someone. That's all I wanted to do, was talk to someone, because I had all these emotions balled up in me, and all I wanted to do was talk. And I guess they felt like they could talk to us by just giving us medicine. They thought that maybe that would solve, but like I said, pills, medicine, it don't solve everything, especially what emotionally in you, what's actually in you. That can't. The only thing that can heal that is get it out and let people know what's going on and tell them how we've been treated and explain to them that wasn't right, and if there's some way that it can be changed so that our sisters, cousins, brothers, nieces, and nephews won't have to go through the same exact thing that we went through.
That was Aldita speaking to the audio and video camera at the Foster Care alumni meeting. Her situation is not unique, unfortunately. there are many other children who similarly had problems. And let us listen to another one of those children, Tristan.
Hi, Tristan Keith Whitfield. I've been up in CPS since the age of 5 years old. I go to CPS. The instant I get up in there, I go see a psychiatrist or a doctor. You know, he put me on three types of pills. You know, he says something to help my anger, something to help my depression, and something to help me relax. And he said I was depressed. My nigga, I mean, I just took the one thing that meant the most to me. That was my family. Just how is a person supposed to be happy after somebody he loved is taken from him, after his family? It's just like stripped from him. And then, like, I talked to a therapist, and they say, just like, sometimes you have to forget your family, you know? You have to move on because your mom isn't going to come get you. And I said, I can't forgive my mama simply because I know my mom would never forgive me. And I am this scrawny dude asking my parents for something to eat, and they say, okay. They go in there and throw some bread, some cheese, and some water, and throw it on a plate and throw it on the floor. Say, there you go. Just like, what? I'm wrong in some kind of way. Just like, how am I wrong in this situation, you know? I mean, if it was my choice, I'd be home with my family. I was in juvenile at the age of 12 years old, and, you know, it wasn't because I was a criminal. It's because I was hungry. And you know, I try to tell cops that, you know, but, you know, my parents, who are they going to see over me, you know? And they ain't even my real parents. So, I mean, that's like out of judgment in this world. It's just like out of judgment because simply because these people aren't my parents, they can't, basically, they can put anything on me that they want to because I'm a 12-year-old kid. I ain't got no voice, no opinion in this world. You know, I'm sitting there just shut out from everything. I stayed up in my room all the time. I ain't never come out, you know. I took my meds, went back just to my room. My stomach started hurting. I would sit there and ball up on the floor and just cry. I couldn't eat, so that's all I could do was cry. And I tried to tell CPS, but I can't use the phone if it's their phone. I can't get to no phone. There's no way I can call them. There's no way I can reach out to tell these people what was happening to me, you know, for like a year. I'm sitting over there basically being tortured, my nigga. I couldn't take showers until they told me to. So school time, I was dirty. I was going up in school with friends staring at me like, who is this dirty little kid, you know, and thinking I'm intentionally being dirty. They staring down upon me, man. They like judging me, you know. My clothes was like, I don't even know what size they were, but all I know is it was basically, like, past my ankles. It was, like, way up on my legs. And, like, there's people who just sit there and laugh at me. You know, I just got so depressed. I would just sit there and cry. I mean, it's just, like, it's hard to see a dude cry, but, I mean, the shit that you go through in CPS, it's enough to make anybody cry. I don't care how big or strong you are. Just enough to make you just fall down. You're just, like, when is this stuff going to end? You know, is it ever going to end? My whole life from the age 5 to 18 years old, I was in CPS, in and out of placements, switching from pills to pills, medication to medication, treatments to treatments. The doctor, you know, I tell him, like, I'm trying to stay off of meds. He told me, you know, it's up to your caseworker. And if I told my foster parents I wouldn't take my medicine, they say, well, then be prepared to move or get, you know, I'll call the cops. And, like, or go to a psychiatric hospital, yeah. Those are my three options. To get out, you call the cops, or I go to a psych hospital for refusing my meds. You know, I didn't really have a choice but to take it. But inside, it was tearing me apart. I could still, it's just like inside, the meds was like slowly just like tearing my chest apart. My chest was getting weaker and weaker. Every time I just breathed, I could feel it just getting more dense. Just like it was tearing me up. Like, the pills that they put you on I don't think it's even tested. I don't think that they even test the reactions between the different medications. They just put you on these three. I even thinking about the outcome of those, and my outcome was bad. Well, I got a speech impediment now. That's people who stare at me and say, oh, he stuttered. That's funny. They criminalize me, man. Just like, I don't know, like, where I go wrong in this world. You know, I mean, I feel that these people can't treat me like this, just drug me up on medications. And then, like, after I'm out of CPS, you know, I get the free college. You know, that's cool, but that's it. Since the age of 5, they stripped me from my family, separated me from the only people that's going to help me after I turn 18. They stripped me from it. Now I don't have no support system. I'm 18 years old and on my own. I can't even go to my mom to talk to my mom. I can't go to my pops to talk to my father. I can't go to my sisters or brothers because I don't even know who they are. I have so much family, I don't even know. I keep hearing, who's this kid dude that's my smaller brother? I got a smaller brother. And, you know, I mean, they don't know how that feels to walk past 2.5 billion people a day and not even know if that's your brother walking past you, if that's your sister over there on across the street. You don't know how much painful that is to a person to actually know who their family is, not know who their mother is, not know who their daddy is. Never seen my daddy. I didn't have a chance to. They stripped me from everything I love. And then I got angry. You know, I started throwing stuff, got depressed, started slamming stuff, fighting. I turned into the bad person that they predicted. So because I had nowhere else to go, I had to turn my anger somewhere. I couldn't talk to nobody because the people in CPS don't care about me. I mean, the only reason that they take us in is for money. There are the good parents that take it in to help us, but there's very few of those. There's very few people who would take you in just because they know that you need help. Age of 12 years old, I was in RTC. Ain't nobody on a 12-year-old black kid who think he grown. That's what you go to any foster parent and say, I don't want no kid over 10 years old. He can't be taught nothing. Truth is, I could be taught. It's just that you didn't take the time to teach me. It's a whole bunch of things in this world I don't know about now. A whole bunch of things I don't know what to do. Check cards, you know, school applications and stuff to start college. I wouldn't know that stuff. So because there ain't nobody took the time to teach me that. I ain't got no support system. My family thrown away. My friends, I have no friends because I've been jumped around from city to city. I've been almost in every city in Texas. Every city in Texas. Everywhere. All the way from Galveston all the way down into Edinburgh. I've been in almost every city that you can think of. Just like, you can't make friends. You can't do anything. You just feel hopeless, helpless sometimes. It's just like, when will this end? You know, just like, when will it end? I know a girl, her foster dad sexually abused her, and this girl came to me. I'm 11 years old. I mean, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do, so all I could do is sit there and cry with her, you know? I mean, she would come in there, have bruises all across her face, her eyes would be black and blue, and she'd have to lie to the school teachers about the stuff that she was going through. And she'd have to lie, otherwise her dad would beat her anyway. I mean, she had no choice but to lie to the school teachers, tell her that she failed too much, you know, just being clumsy, just ran into a door. You know, her friends would sit there and look at her and laugh at her. You know, her friends would just sit there and talk behind her back. They only stay with her because, you know, I mean, just to make fun of a person behind their back. You know, this girl was going through so much. I knew a dude, his parents had him on a leash. Whenever he went, he had a rope tied around him. They treated him like a dog. They yanked the chain. They called him a nigger. And the parents were black, just like him. And they called him that. Guess where he at now? He dead. He joined the gang. He thought that was a safe way out. He thought that was a safe way to go. He thought that was the only family he would ever have. I got tired of being abused. I got tired of being yelled at. I got tired of being called pathetic, man. I can't deal with that type of stuff. And then if I blow up, they call the cops and I'm going to jail. There is no way to win in this. There's no way to win in this situation. I think a foster kid can't be taught. You just spend some time to talk to him or her. Ask her how she's doing, how he's feeling, the stuff she's feeling or he's feeling. Sometimes they'll surprise you with the stuff they say. Just take the time to talk to them. Just take the time to see what they have to say, and I guarantee you, the stuff they have to say is going to shock you. A kid don't need education to help him. They said don't make excuses for anything that you do in life, which means don't put medication as an excuse to make a child behave. If a child chooses to behave, trust me, he or she will behave. He can't pay for the medication. Put us on medication to make you richer, to bring in your paycheck, to bring in your bills while destroying our lives that you've already destroyed halfway by taking us from the people that love us and separating us. I say the only thing that drives me right now is I got to prove these people that I'm going to be somebody successful. I got dreams to become somebody important. I'm going to do something that's going to change the world. I'm going to do something to better myself or better my people, to better my family. I'm going to do something to be remembered. That way, I see Tristan Key Whitfield, the boy who was supposed to fail, is going to be scratched out. The boy who succeeded, I'm going to be on the top of the charts. I'm going to be changing the CPS rules. That's my goal in life, is to make sure that y'all niggas don't be doing that stuff to other people like me.
That was Tristan talking about his own experiences. And so we clearly have many, many voices here of our foster children in care. In a national survey, according to the Child Welfare League of America, 25% of foster youth reported that they had been homeless at least one night, 2.5 to 4 years after exiting foster care. 3 in 10 of the nation's homeless adults report foster care history. In a national survey, 54% of former foster youth had completed high school. In Clark County, Nevada, 50% of youth left foster care without a high school degree. So our foster care children are leaving without adequate skills to gain employment. In Wisconsin, 18% of former foster youth experienced incarceration after leaving foster care. 60% of young women had children 2.5 to 4 years after leaving foster care. In Wisconsin, 47% of former foster youth receive mental health services while in foster care. And while in foster care, it is not uncommon for a child to be placed on many different psychotropic medications at the same time. Some investigations have found children on as many as 13 mind-altering drugs prescribed by a psychiatrist all at the same time. These drugs have adverse side effects, and they can include all categories of psychiatric drugs, antidepressants, antipsychotics, mood stabilizers, anxiety medications, anticonvulsant medications, and SSRI drugs are common, such as Paxil, Zoloft, Prozac, and even some children have been described as taking Risperdal, Zyprexa, Gideon, and other new generation antipsychotics, which are linked to a weight gain in obesity and also diabetes. Listen to Joshua.
I'm 18 and I've been in foster care since I was 12 years old. And I've been in 16, 17 foster homes, numerous, and counting as well as the RTCs I've been to in the pavilions. I know from experience that what goes on behind closed doors, no one else sees but the foster children. Entering foster care at age of 12, I was overwhelmed with the loss of my parents and with the loss of my family members, knowing that I would not be able to see them till I age out of system and work with them. In the first foster home, I started with 8 medications, and 3 of them were for depression, mad depression, and there's another one that they put me on for my bipolar, Abilify, and lithium carbonate, and just interacted really with my body. I became tired, couldn't do much, didn't want to go in the sunlight because they said sunlight would interact wrong, causing me to vomit, nauseous, and have faint spells. So I was mostly inside to keep myself okay because I had to stay well. Because I showed any other wrong symptoms that this put me on more medication. Well, they put me on numerous medications that would numb the pain, but I became realized that I was a walking zombie. When I was taking Depakote, they sent me on to another medication. My psychiatrist said it would do very well, but he overlooked that effects are, and Depakote would not work well with the other one that I was using. So I ended up sick, vomiting, faint spells, fainted in school, couldn't concentrate in school. So I just couldn't concentrate, nothing. This is my grade declined 20s and 17s, and I couldn't, the system is special ed, I still failed, and I couldn't get up. They blamed it on my mood, so they sent me more medication, and steadily, I just felt really slow. And I couldn't get up without all the other kids. I felt alone, knowing that I could not even keep up with all the other kids. Kids make fun of me, call me slow, then I had to deal with that if I wanted to work the system, because I didn't want to be thrown into a pavilion again. So I had to keep myself out of trouble. I just isolated myself. If I don't do anything dumb, they won't look at me as bad. I know they're writing down every single bad thing I did. I saw them writing in the paperwork, documents, my foster mom, a psychiatrist, my therapist, they're all jotting every bad thing I've done. I tell them a good thing, they say good job, but they never write it down. I didn't understand that at that time, but now I do. And I just hope no one else has to go through what I had to go through. It's a very bad thing. This pills to cover up the pain is not the way. There's always a therapist, you can always have someone to talk to. This pill's not the way. I was dropping the floor, and they didn't know what was happening to me, but they always just leave me there. And I asked them, could it be involved in medication? They said, no, it couldn't be involved in medication. So I looked in the medication book at the hospital, and they said it has to be one of those. The doctor said, because we looked at them, I got 7 or 8 different medications that did not go well with any of them. And I just kept on having episodes. So finally, I got out of that foster home, got a new psychiatrist, and they had to evaluate me all over again. And they checked me and checked it, and they realized that the psychiatrist was doing wrong. He was putting me on more medications just to get him to get it off the label, just keep it going. I've been in 14 foster homes, 8 pavilions, about 6 RTCs all together. My shortest foster home was 5 days, and it really worked very well. I experienced problems. I cannot call my sister. She was the only family I had. Every time they said they moved me closer, they moved me further away from them. I realized there was problems at home. I should have been there to help my sister, knowing that I couldn't. I was supposed to run away, but running away only made it worse. So I had to stay with the system and do what they told me to do, and to get out. So I went through the RTC's pavilions, things that really damaged my mind, but I showed them the Ackermanville. I graduated, got a diploma, and currently in a job right now. People say foster care is good, but it's only icing on it. The real stuff is on the inside that no one goes through. The foster children go through it. What goes on behind closed doors is what foster kids are doing. Caseworkers can say, oh, it's a fine home, until they live there. Then their whole opinions will change. I know they will. Because I was beaten, molested, and abused, and neglected in foster home. I was getting way times worse than when I was getting in my home and with my parents. They were abusing drugs, but I got a lot worse than that. They never abused me, nothing like that. Now, neglected me in a bit. But foster home was a very bad place. My last one was a really good one. She really worked with me. She wouldn't let me quit. She let me go to boot camp. She didn't, I didn't want to drop out of school. She never let me. And she kind of pushed me. I finally graduated. I thank her for that.
So this is information from the foster care Alumni Association, and additional information can be obtained from their website, which is www.fostercarealumni.org. And the Foster Care Alumni Association is for persons who have experienced foster care. Everyone who I have played the audio tape of are all over 18 years of age, and the tapes had been taken by a psych troop tooth and had been presented in the public forum in order to bring this very important issue to light, because the foster children, former foster children, are very anxious to see that their voices be heard. And so we are using their voices in a non-commercial use so that they can get better exposure to the issues that they bring forward. I wanted to point out to you that this dovetails very well into the missions of Medical Whistleblower, because our doctors are reporting similar concerns in regards to the drugging of children. And you may have, if you've been following our work, you probably are aware of the fact that we have been encouraging people to look at this Psychiatric Rights Project website run by attorney Jim Godstein out of Anchorage, Alaska. That's psychrights.org. And on his website, he does indicate a lot of information in regards to the adverse effects of drugs, on the psychiatric drugs. And also, he has information that was gathered together for a presentation to the courts. And I would ask you to look at the information presented by a competent investigator of the Food and Drug Administration, Alan Jones, who was the OIG FDA investigator for the state of Pennsylvania. His information delineates very clearly how the political agenda to make money for the pharmaceutical companies far outweighed the importance of making sure that our children in foster care got proper care. Instead, we have a situation where the use of these children for psychiatric drug clinical trials has become an industry, and without informed consent, because these children are wards of the state, they are forced into drug trials, and when they are forced into drug trials, they have no option to opt out because they are wards of the state. They are unable to choose their own options, and therefore they can't say no. Their civil rights have been curtailed. And when the system believes that forcing these drugs on the children is beneficial to the state coffers, because these drug medications are almost always covered under federal law, and the new Medicaid and Medicare Act of 2003 did change the process in the federal approval of these drugs for foster children, and thus made it possible to do widespread clinical trials using foster children in clinical trials. Let's listen to one more foster child. This is Aisha.
I was in foster care for 15 years of my life. They put me in a foster home with my brother. It was like 13 kids. About 13 kids, really big family. Everybody was on medication except for me. This is like the first time I saw the doctor, Dr. King. They put me on depression medicine in the morning time, 200 milligrams, so I think it was 200 milligrams of Prozac, to get me up in the morning to, you know, talk and be happy or whatever. 200 milligrams of Seroquel at night to put me to sleep for 4 years. That's the only medication they put me on, but everybody in the house had at least five pills, like sometimes kids would have like 13 pills in their hands and take them all at once, like they'd been doing it for so long. Before I started taking the medicine, I never, I was just quiet. I was just new to the whole therapeutic home, foster home situation, because I was in basic care for 9 years. So it was different, and I didn't want to be overly nice to everybody, or I didn't want to, I just wanted to keep to myself and think and draw and keep to myself. So they put me on medication. But at nighttime, they'd give me my meds, and I'd pass out within, like 200 milligrams of Seroquel. I'd pass out about 10, 15 minutes. I'd knock out. put all of us to sleep. It's easier that way, I don't know. Easier that way, I guess. They told me I needed it. The doctor told me I was depressed because I would cry, but I cried because I didn't have anybody to relate to. I didn't have anybody to talk to. So I wasn't as talkative as everybody else, so I guess they wanted to make me fit in. Maybe if the kids would wonder why I was the only one without medication, a couple of the kids asked me why I wasn't on medication. I remember waking up in the morning. I remember I was in this one shelter, and they'd give me my meds, and we'd wake up really early, and we'd get dressed, and, like, they'd knock on the door, and, "Are you sure? Wake up. And I'd hear them, but I didn't care that I heard them. Like, they can sit there and, like, yell in my ear, and I'd lay there comfortable, like, I don't want to get up, I don't have to get up, but I did, I mean, I did have to get up. I mean, it's a shelter, you have to do that, or else, you know, the consequences. But I remember going to school, and going to the principal's office, and falling asleep in there, like, every day, falling asleep in the principal's office until I was ready to function. I'd miss at least an hour and a half every day of school. I was tired every day while I was in school because of the Seroquel I was taking every night. I would miss an hour and a half, at least an hour every day, because I was so tired from the Seroquel that I had taken just the night before, 200 milligrams. But then I started smoking pot when I aged out. I started smoking pot, smoking myself to sleep. And that's the only way I felt like I could deal with everything, like getting out. 15 years, like the doctor I had for 4 years from the first therapeutic foster home I was in, he got his license taken away. And I didn't like him because every time I'd go see him, he'd talk like, the last thing we'd talk about was drugs. The first thing he'd ask is, how is your meds? And what kind of answer am I supposed to have? Are the meds working? I don't know. How would I know? How would I know if they're working? My answer would always be like, yes, because I don't want any more. If I would say no, I'm scared that he'd say something like, well, should we up the dose? And I saw the other kids, the way they would act. And kind of scary for me, knowing that I was one of the only kids in the house to only take two pills every morning and two pills every night, even though my dose was really high. I think that I was really scared throughout the foster home, living there, that I'd end up like moody or not being able to function if for some reason I'd leave CPS or I'd age out and not be able to function in the world. So I started like seeing counselors, like talking about how to deal with things without my depression, like without my depression medicine. So I think kids should definitely have a choice whether they want to take the medicine or not. My doctor, we talk about meds, talk about feeling, like, how I felt about them. It was all about the meds. It was all about how they make you feel. I think that counseling has helped me more than any kind of drug can help me. Because apparently, you know, taking Seroquel for 4 years didn't help me to do, I mean, the only thing it helped me do was switch drugs, you know, to illegal drugs. That's the only thing. I mean, when I got out of CPS, I didn't go to get my transitional Medicaid. I got out of CPS. I moved, and I didn't get transitional Medicaid. So I started smoking every day. I don't think it helped me. It gave me addiction, something that I needed before I fell asleep every night, or I felt I needed, or something I was used to. I don't think it helped me. I never knew that my medication was antipsychotic. And they told me it was to help me go to sleep, the Seroquel. I never knew what it was for. They were just like, up your dose. I was so scared of them upping my dose all the time. I believe that I came out pretty good. I came out the way I'm supposed to come out. You know, I turned out okay. Could have been worse. Could have been better. Things definitely need to be changed about the CPS. The way things go, the way the rules are, things need to be changed. How about when somebody acts up? When somebody acts up, incident report is written. Go see the doctor, and then the doctor asks a few questions, and then immediately after the session, pulls out a chart of medications and how to fix it. Maybe that should be changed. Maybe kids can see 2 to maybe even 3 different doctors. And if 2 or 3 different doctors say the same thing, then maybe try out the medication. But just because of staff or the foster family says that somebody has a problem, or I don't think that the foster parents should be allowed to diagnose foster children. Foster parents and doctors seem to get along really well.
It is clear that in the Texas Algorithm Project protocol, which is the way in which the pharmaceutical companies had rolled out this drugging of foster children for clinical trials into the welfare system, that in that project there was no concern for the human rights of these children to be used as human subjects, and no control over that. And no indication that perhaps other means of treatment, perhaps psychotherapy, counseling, those kinds of things, which many of these children have indicated were more helpful to them than the drugs, should have been considered first, that non-drug therapies should have been used, considered first. I want to let everyone know that this is Dr. Jeanette Parker, and we're coming to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. Medical Whistleblower is an advocacy network for persons who are reporting abuse and neglect of patients, medical fraud, and human rights violations. And if you are a foster child and you are interested in getting additional information, I want to encourage you to look at the Foster Care Alumni of America website, and that is www.fostercarealumni.org. And you can also view additional videotapes of foster children on YouTube, www.youtube.com/psychtroop. That is PSYCHETRUTH, Psych Truth. And for that, there are many valuable things to be learned by going online and getting additional information so that you can be properly informed and be able to have support and advocacy. No one can advocate better for foster care children than former foster care children. And to be in the Foster Care Alumni Association, you should have been in foster care at some point in your life. You can be either still in transitional care as long as you're over 18. You can be emancipated from foster care, legally emancipated from foster care, or completely no longer in foster care and still be in the association. And you do need to be 18 years of age to join and of legal age. So if you wish to gain additional information, that's a good place to go. The Child Welfare League is another good place to get information. And I would advise persons who want to get additional information about statistics and foster care to go to them. And the Foster Care Alumni Association has a very good outreach in regards to informational support as well. So do contact them and see how they can provide you a support and camaraderie as you face your life forward. And you can reach them on their toll-free line, 888-ALUMNI, A-L-U-M-N-I, zero. Okay? And I want to thank you all for listening to me today on this very important subject. Medical whistleblower, of course, is very concerned about the care of children and the rights of children in foster care. And should you want to get a hold of me, I am available by email at medicalwhistleblower@gmail.com. And as you know, I offer this radio blog show at 9 o'clock on Monday morning Central Time and also at 5 p.m. on Saturday evening at Central Time. Thank you very much for listening.